Any questions about anything from last time? So I thought that I'd work a little bit more carefully about finding the Fourier series for the harpsichord pluck shape today, to start off with. But an interesting thing I didn't mention is, if you ever stood in front of a piano and push like a middle C button, middle C, and then play a trombone in front of the piano, so push the key down so the string can ring, and you play a trombone, and you'll hear that the piano vibrates and sounds like a trombone. So that, it's called sympathetic vibrations, and it means that those Fourier coefficients are activating those solutions in the string and making them vibrate like that. And then you do the same thing with a saxophone, and the piano string sounds like a saxophone because it activates those Fourier coefficients in exactly the right blend. And so that means that a string can sound like any musical instrument, because it's just a matter of activating it in a way that the Fourier coefficients are the relative values they should be. That's kind of a cool experiment to do. In fact, the only thing that distinguishes musical instruments is what the coefficients in that expansion are. So let's see, I was going to do the pluck shape here, and today I'm going to graph it more carefully. So let's call this, I was calling this f of t, this is f of x. X is the space variable, and it goes from 0 to pi. So to make this thing make sense, let's just make it be x on this first chunk. So x would have slope 1, and at the middle point here, I'm plucking it in the middle of the string at pi over 2, so then it would max out right here at pi over 2. And then it would have slope minus 1 after that, and it would be 0 at pi. So you can convince yourself on this side, it's pi minus x. That would be 0 at pi, and we'd have slope minus 1, and would be the other side of that the TP function there. And so remember, what we're trying to do is, so we want to know, is f of x equal to its Fourier series, which is the sum as n goes from 1 to infinity, an sine nx. There's a question about the homework wants you to show that sine nx and sine mx are orthogonal, meaning their integral from 0 to pi is 0, and it's implicit that n and m are positive integers. I guess the problem didn't say that explicitly, but that's what you assume, that n and m are positive integers. And so Johann Bernoulli realizes the sine functions are orthogonal. So if this is possible, then what you do is you multiply this whole thing by one of those sine functions. So I'll multiply by sine m times x and integrate from 0 to pi. So let's see, on the left-hand side, I would get the integral from 0 to pi of f of x sine n mx dx. I'm kind of repeating this because it's the most important thing to understand. And when I distribute the sum, so I'd have a sum from 1 to infinity of a n sine nx sine mx. And I'm going to integrate that. And now this is something that Bernoulli and Euler and people did. They said, oh, let's not worry. I'm going to take an integral of a sum. I'll interchange the summation with the integral. So very often it's true that you can do that if these things converge rapidly. You could take this integral and put it inside the sum. But that's a big if, and that's maybe what Johann didn't like. But I can move... If everything works great according to plan, I can interchange the sum with the integral. And the deal of being orthogonal means that these are zero, when n is different from n. So it's going to kill most everything in the sum except the one term. So this thing right here, because of orthogonality, is equal to zero if for all the ones where n is different from n. Well, it's only going to spit out one that's not zero, and that'll be the sum of the integral of the square, one that's squared. So this would actually, only one would pop out, and it would be when n is equal to m. So I'd get am integral from 0 to pi, and that would be a square. And that's certainly not zero, because that's got positive spots. So that's definitely a positive area. And so it's going to be a positive number. That's an integral you learned how to calculate as a freshman. That's pi over 2. And so Bernoulli's, it's called Fourier's formula, but I think it should be called Bernoulli's formula. This tells you that those coefficients are determined. If they exist, they're completely determined. So this is uniqueness of Fourier series. If that series converges, this AM has to be 2 over pi times the integral from 0 to pi of f of x times sine mx. So that's like the Taylor's formula. If the Taylor's formula, if you mess around with it, you show that an has to be the nth derivative of a of f at a divided by n factorial. And that's uniqueness of Taylor series. There's something very similar for Fourier series. The ans have to be that. You don't have any choice, if it converges. We don't know yet that it does. But so let's calculate these things. Let me calculate. An would be 2 over pi. And then I've got to integrate f of x against sine nx. So let's see, from 0 to pi over 2, that's where the function was x. So f of x would be x there, times sine nx dx. That takes care of the integral from 0 to pi over 2, but then at pi over 2, a different function kicks in. And on that interval, so that would be from pi over 2 to pi, that's where the function was pi minus x times sine nx dx. Well, you sat through integrals like that in freshman calculus, so I'm not going to bore you to death with that. But you remember from freshman calculus, you would let, in this integral, you would let this be u, and then you'd let this be dv and use integration by parts. And on this one, you'd let pi minus x be the u and sine nx dx be the dv and use integration by parts there. So you remember integral of u dv is uv minus the integral v du. And so the reason that's a good idea is because, let's see, if dv is sine nx, then v would be what? Minus 1 over n cosine nx. And the good thing about this integration by parts is you know how to integrate a cosine, and the du becomes dx. And so you get an integral you can do there. And if you'll have to sit down and calculate some of those things in the exercises, so you'll have to brush up on your freshman integrals. I also wanted to show you the power of Maple maybe a little bit. Let me switch to the PC here. And hopefully Maple won't crash on me today. I'll bring up the same thing I had last hour. Let's see. So I want to use some of these plot commands, so I'll load them. Let's see. What did I do? Oh, I haven't done anything yet. I want a new prompt, so I'm going to give it to myself. There it is. I want to calculate some integrals. So here's how Maple can do integrals. I want to integrate. Oh, let's first integrate x times sine n times x. And I'll integrate that with respect to x. There's the antiderivative. So so Maple did integration by parts for me. That's cool. All right, but I really only wanted to, I want to do a definite integral of that from x equals 0 to pi over 2. So that I want to make x equals 0 dot dot to pi. Pi is capital Pi over 2. There it is. So it Maple doesn't know that n is an integer. So it wouldn't, sine of multiples of pi over 2 would be 0, 0, 1, 0, minus 1, 0, 1, 0, minus 1. So these numbers we're going to be able to figure out later. Okay, that's the first half of the integral. Now let me put in the second half of the integral. Let's see, I can be sneaky here. I can go plus. Notice that Maple does commands the order that you type them in. I'll push, this is an apple. To commands. Crap. Oh, what did I do? Can I undo that? Undo. So what? How do you copy is it Control-C? Okay, Control-C. Oh, this is Maple. Oh, and I'm sorry. I'm not on a Mac. This is a PC. Okay, Control-C. I have a Mac keyboard. That's what's killing me. Okay, I just copied that same integral, but this time I'm going to change it to pi minus x in the function part times sine of pi minus x times sine. And then I want to integrate that part from pi over 2 to pi. So dot dot pi. Maybe it's too big. Let's go to 5. Can you still see that? Okay, let's see what happens. That's looking kind of ugly. But I'm looking at it and I say, hey, Maple's not canceling things. I can see things that cancel. Like they're staring me in the face. So I'm going to tell Maple to get with it and simplify that. It didn't even try to simplify it. So I'll write simplify parentheses. Here, parentheses, and now it's simple. That finally is nice. And notice these squares and sine of n times pi; those are all zero, right? Sine is zero at each multiple of pi, so that's not even there. And this is sine pi over 2 times n, and that goes from being zero. Let's see, at n equal 1, it'd be plus 1, then 0, then minus 1, 0, plus 1, 0, minus 1, 0. So that's what I get, that alternating between being plus and minus for just the odd numbers. So for 1, it's plus 1. And for the even numbers, it would all be 0 because this would be a sine of a multiple of pi. Those are all 0. And then it would alternate between being plus and minus 1. So Maple's handy for doing stuff like that. So let's see what I'm going to go back to the laptop, to the tablet here. That calculation shows you that the A1, let's see, there was a 2 over, I dropped my 2 over pi. So I need to multiply that by 2 over pi. That would give me A1 equals 4 over pi times 1 over 1 squared. A2 and A4, etc., are all equal to 0. Big fat 0. And then A3, that's the first time it alternates. There'd be a 4 over pi times minus 1 over 3 squared. And A5 would be a 4 over pi times 1 over 5 squared. And then you see the pattern. They alternate, and they're squares of odd numbers. And so my f of it, the function that I showed you using Maple last time, that this, I wrote out the sum for this. That would be 4 over pi times 1 over 1 squared times sine 1x minus 1 over 3 squared times sine 3x plus 1 over sine 5 squared sine 5x, etc. You see the pattern. And that's what I wrote out in Maple, and I was able to sum it up to, I did 20 terms, and it summed nicely. And the bigger, the more terms I took, the more pointed that little kink was. The straight smarts were getting really good and smooth and straight, but the pointy spot was getting more and more pointy the more terms I took. But you know the sum of 1 over n squared? That converges. So here's a fact. So you know that the sum of 1 over n squared converges. In fact, Fourier series is going to let us calculate that sum. We know it's less than infinity. That's the integral test. So integral test, remember from freshman calculus, the integral test, you compare that sum to the integral from, not from zero, but say from someplace, 1 to infinity of 1 over x squared dx. That integral converges. And so by the integral test, that sum converges. All right. Well, look at we're taking a subset of that sum. We're taking 3, 5, 7, and we're doing plus and minuses. And the sine functions wiggle between plus and minus 1. So I claim that the tail end of that series is really small. How many people have had 341 and did the Weierstrass M test in there? Remember that? Okay, maybe I'll review some of that stuff. But these terms, their absolute value of those terms is 1 over less than n squared. And the sum of all the ones, not just the odd ones, is finite. So that's called the Weierstrass M test. That series converges absolutely and uniformly to something. What?
I'm wondering if the sum is pi squared over 6.
It is. Yeah, we're going to be able to use Fourier series to actually calculate this famous sum, and we're going to get, is it pi over 6?
Pi squared over 6.
In fact, I think we can't use it today. But no, if I had the right Fourier series in front of us, I could demonstrate this, if I knew that Fourier series converge, which we will know soon. Okay, so the conclusion from this is that, let's take 1 over n squared times sine nx. Sine is always bounded by less than 1 or plus and minus 1. So this is less than or equal to 1 over n squared. And so the famous Weierstrass M test, I'm forgetting how to spell Weierstrass. Weierstrass M test shows this series converges uniformly. We don't know what it converges to yet, although we have a suspicion. On 0 pi, in fact, square brackets. And it's a fact that the uniform limit of continuous functions is continuous. So whatever it converges to, it's a continuous function. So here's a fact. The uniform limit of continuous functions, those finite sums of sine terms are definitely continuous. functions is a continuous function. So I'll review those things as we use them later on in the semester. But right, that thing converges. I just want to the big thing to do is going to be to show that it actually converges to F. Today I know it converges, but I'm going to have to do some work to show it converges to F. Numerical experiments show me that it does. I thought it'd be fun to play around with some other examples before we get into the science behind this stuff. Any questions about anything? I want to do an example next that's the easiest Fourier series there is to calculate. So let's do an example. Instead of taking my harpsichord pluck function, I'm just going to take the function that's 1. From 0 to pi. And then the Fourier coefficients are very easy to compute. An would be 2 over pi integral from 0 to pi of f of x sine nx dx. And if f is 1, that's just the integral of sine nx dx. Antiderivative for sine is minus cosine. And so it would be 1 over n. This is equal to 2 over pi. The antiderivative is minus 1 over n cosine nx, evaluated between 0 and pi. Cosine of 0 is 1. So I get here, let's see, I can bring out the n. I get 2 over pi n, and a minus of minus is going to give me 1. That's the cosine 0 thing, and then this is going to be minus cosine n pi. Let's see, cosine of 0 is 1, and then cosine of pi is minus 1. So this alternates between being plus 1, minus 1, plus 1, minus 1. So I claim, what do I get? This is, when it's equal to plus 1, that would be when n is an even number, this would be equal to plus 1. So this, and so then it's going to be 1 minus 1. So it's going to be a big fat 0 if n is even. And if n is odd, the 1, 3, 5, 7, then this cosine is minus, and I get 1 minus a minus 1. That's 2. And so I'd get 4 over pi n if n is odd. Okay, that is those are all the Fourier coefficients. So the big question here is the function that I've graphed equal to, let's see, there's going to be a 4 over pi in front. The first n equal odd one would be a sine, that would be 1 over 1 times sine 1, sine x. So 1. And the next one, they're all positive. So the next one would be 1 over 3 sine 3x. The next one would be plus 1 over 5 sine 5x. And you see the pattern. You know that thing I did before, those sum of the squares, those converged. But this is a famous series that's divergent. 1 over 3 plus 1 over 5 plus 1 over 7. That's a piece of the harmonic series that diverges. You can... So I'm not sure this is going to converge. I'm going to have to play around with it. The funny thing is, the wiggling makes this converge even though the coefficients look kind of nasty. The coefficients are not absolutely summable. But the wiggling of the sine functions somehow make those converge anyway. And we're going to see that in a second. this is a fun thing to graph. It makes a beautiful graph. Questions about that? Before I switch to maple and see what happens. Let's see. I don't want to see this anymore. But let's see. Right, I'm looking at this function. The f. I wrote a sum here. I wish I could focus on something here. I'll write this. I'll change this to a semicolon. Yeah, that's the one I want to fixate on. So this is f colon equal. That means it's defined to be. And it's going to be a function, and the function is going to send x to this. So the syntax is x minus sign greater than, that looks like a little arrow. So x gets sent to a sum, and the sum is going to be as n goes from 0 to 5, and I want to spit out the odd numbers. So I'll put 1, remember the coefficients are 1 over the odd numbers. 2 times n plus 1 would spit me out in odd numbers. So I get the first 5 odd numbers, 1, 3, 5, 7, out to, I don't know what the last one is, 11. So that's the coefficient. I've got them in parentheses here. It's 1 over that number, parentheses, times sine, in the same odd number, times x. Right? And I'm going to sum out the first 5 of those, 6 of them actually. So that defines the function. Now I want to plot that function. I'm going to plot it from minus 3 pi to 3 pi, just to see what it looks like. I'm going to make a semicolon instead of a colon. That's neat. So, remember from 0 to pi, it was supposed to be 1. And it looks like it's kind of hanging around. Well, I didn't put the 4 over pi. So if I put a 4 over pi, it would be looking like it was constant up there. It doesn't look very constant, but I've only taken 6 terms. So, and notice that it's periodic. So all those sine functions are odd. So on this interval, it would be the same as minus this, because all those sine functions are periodic. So if I know it on 0 pi, and it's automatically known here because those functions are all odd. So it's going to be the same thing, function, but minus, reflected. And then they're all 2 pi periodic. So it repeats from minus pi to pi. It would repeat on this next interval and do exactly the same thing. And the period of all is 2 pi. Okay. So that's a feature of Fourier series. If you're studying them on interval from 0 to pi, they're actually defined all over the place, and they're periodic. That's a convenient fact. Let me now, I'm going to take more. Let's go out to 10 here. So I'll take 10 terms. And this time, instead of going from minus 3 pi to 3 pi, I'll just go from minus pi to pi. See what I get. Let's go full screen. Notice that it's smoothing out nicely here. It looks like it's converging to a constant function here. But it's overshooting. First of all, it has to go through 0 because sine of 0 is 0. So there's no way it's going to converge to 1 at 0. And it kind of overshoots it. This is going to turn out to be a feature of Fourier series. Let me do, how about 20 terms? And do it again. Now it's... Oh, there it is. Now it's the convergence to a constant. It's not as beautiful as that straight line one was, but it's definitely getting constant-y looking here. And these wiggles are getting smaller, so it's getting closer to being constant. It's still got to be 0 at 0, and it overshoots by what appears to be the same amount. The overshooting is happening in a very narrow band. So by adding more and more terms, I can make it squeeze out. Let's see, I want to plot two functions on the same graph. Let me plot f of x. Oh, I wonder what that... what did I say should be in the front? 4 over pi? 4 over pi times that sum. Okay, and now I want to plot that function and also the function 1. So I'll put curly bracket plus 1. I'm putting two functions inside curly brackets. That'll plot both of them in there. And I think I'll go from 0 to pi. That's cool. Now you can see how good the approximation is there in the middle. The error is really small, and sure enough, it looks like it's converging to 1. That red line is 1. And that overshooting, if I made it be 50 now, that overshooting would look like exactly the same amount. That's called Gibbs phenomenon. When a Fourier series has a jump, it overshoots the jump by exactly the same amount every time. That's why very often when you hear synthesized things, like a square wave synthesized, if you try to do it with Fourier series, you're going to get these spiky little staticky things. So it's a problem if you want to use sine waves, like in electronic things, to simulate a square wave. There's going to be this overshooting thing called Gibbs phenomenon, and it's going to botch it up. So there are drawbacks. These things don't converge nicely at jumps. They converge nicely everywhere else. But you'll notice that the jump goes from minus 1 to plus 1, and that the value right here is the midpoint of the jump. That's going to be a feature of power series also. At the actual jump, the Fourier series converges to the midpoint of the jump. Yeah. Well, I'm going to say more about these things as we go along. I wanted you to see some pictures. Yeah, there's some fun pictures to look at. Maybe next time I'll bring more pictures of famous Fourier series. Questions about that? Or about Maple?
Yeah. Are you going to put the Maple code in the aftermath?
I could, yeah. I put the one from last time there.
Okay.
And I can put this one too. Maybe I'll clean it up a little bit before I do that. Yeah, it's fun to play around with this stuff, and you can get your hands on it. Oh, there was something. Remember I crashed Maple last time? It was with this command, animate 3D. And this is a sine 2x times sine 2y, and the animation variable is cosine. And I'm going to do it on a box. The x and the y are going to be a little square from 0 to pi, 0 to pi. And the animation variable I'm going to make go from 0 to 2 pi. I guess I should just make it be cosine 1 times 2. I'm not going to touch it until... What? Are you kidding? Animate 3D. Well, that's... It works great in my office. Uh-oh. Doggone it! I killed it again. What does this mean? With plot. Huh! I wonder why I'm killing Maple. It doesn't kill it in my office. It's a beautiful graph. That's one of the modes of oscillation of a square membrane. The square membrane is even more complicated than a one-dimensional string. You get more modes of oscillation, and it's a very beautiful picture to look at. And someday I hope I'll show it to you. I might ask ITAP what's going on here. And now I can't even close out Maple, but I'm done with it. So I'll switch back to the laptop. So before I get anything fancier, you'll notice that when I talked about this function on the interval 0 pi and started looking at what the Fourier series converges to, so this is about extensions of the series to the whole real line. So let's go back to my my harpsichord pluck shape I had this little pluck here from 0 to pi. All those sine functions are odd. So if it converges to that there on the negative real line, those things would be the odd extension of this thing. So it would look like this. And that's because all those sine functions are odd. So if it looks like that between 0 and pi, it has to look like that between 0 and minus pi. And now all the sine functions are also 2 pi periodic. And so that means this thing would start repeating after 2 pi. So it would go... And this part is because all those the sine nx terms are 2 pi periodic. Okay, so that's a feature of Fourier series. Even though we were looking at it on from 0 to pi, they actually converge, and the convergence can be figured out on the whole real line by this picture. First, you extend it as an odd function to minus pi to pi, and then you extend it as a periodic function. That's the Fourier sine series. I did the similar picture with that, the other one. Let's see, what was the other one? It was, it looked like this. From 0 to pi, it went up and wiggled. Actually, I don't have the Gibbs phenomenon there. It overshot and then hung down and wiggled nicely for like this, and then it overshot again like that. It was trying to converge to one in that, in those nice little wiggles in the middle. And so all those sine terms are odd, which means over from 0 to minus pi, I'd get the same picture, but like that. And then it would repeat in a 2 pi periodic way. So then it would go, and that's what my maple picture showed me, etc. Over here, it would go up and repeat and be 2 pi periodic. And so now I want to talk about the full Fourier series. What I've been working with so far would be called the Fourier sine series. So the full Fourier series would be on minus pi to pi. And we would try to expand a function like this, not just in terms of sine. There'd be a constant term, and then the full series would involve the sine piece plus a cosine piece. The sine functions are all odd, so you can think of this as splitting a function into an even part and an odd part. And when you read Stein, he's going to talk about that, and maybe think about it in exactly that way. So when I was dealing with the sine part, I only had odd functions to deal with. But maybe there's even functions and I need them. And the amazing thing is, this series I can study with exactly the same techniques as I did the easier sine series. And so the big fact is that those functions are orthogonal. The big fact. So what are the functions? The functions are 1 sine nx and cosine nx are orthogonal functions. On the interval from minus pi to pi. So most of the, let's see, so what do you have to, you'd have to calculate? I did it nicely for the sine function, but so what do you have to check? You would have to check integral from minus pi to pi. Let's see, 1 times sine nx has to be 0. You'd have to check that the integral from minus pi to pi of 1 times cosine nx is equal to 0. And then you'd also have to, well, we already did check this, minus pi to pi of sine nx sine mx dx equals 0, etc. This is getting kind of tedious. Let's see, how many more do I have to do? I'd have to do cosine nx. This would be if n is unequal to m. And I'd have to do cosine mx dx. And I'd also have to check integral from minus pi to pi. It's the last one. Sine nx times cosine mx dx equals 0. And that would be for all n and m. That just means take any two of those functions in the list. If they're different, they're orthogonal. When you get the same function twice, then you've got a square. And it's not, a square would not be identically 0, so you get some positive area. So the integrals, when you get a square, are going to all be positive. And that leads to exactly the same consideration. You can determine what those coefficients must be. I did it in the simpler case of the sine series, but the same reasoning shows. We can see that if f of x sums to its Fourier series, equals a Fourier series, then those numbers are determined. Then the a, let's see, what's 1? A0 would be the integral from minus pi to pi of f of x. Oh, I should have calculated the squares of those things. Darn. Am I running out of time? Okay, so what am I going to do? I'm going to I'm going to write the answer and tell you how I get it. The A naught turns out to be 1 over 2 pi times the integral from minus pi to pi of f of x dx. That's the average of f on minus pi to pi. And if you think about the integral of all those sines and cosines, the integrals are 0. So if I just integrate that formula from minus pi to pi, I would get 2 pi times a naught, and all those other integrals of sines and cosines would be 0, and I'd be left with this average here. Yeah, so maybe I should say why. I've got f of x equal that sum of trig. If I multiply by 1 and integrate, minus pi to pi, this is just the integral of the function, and this one would give me 2 pi times a naught, and each one of those trig functions from minus pi to pi, that integral is 0, because they have as many humps above the axis as below. You could calculate them. And so this turns out to be 2 pi times a naught, plus a sum of zeros, because all those trig functions integrate to 0. So that gives me the a naught is 1 over 2 pi times that integral. All right, and to get the other coefficients, let me tell you what they are. The an, when you do it the same way, this time I'd multiply by sine n over x, and use orthogonality, and I would get that the an is 1 over pi integral from minus pi to pi of f of x sine nx dx. And the bn's are 1 over pi integral from minus pi to pi f of x cosine nx. Those are the famous formulas. And you get them from exactly the same consideration. I write out that Fourier series inequality, I multiply it by cosine nx, and integrate. All the terms would be zero except for one would spit out a coefficient, the an coefficient. And to figure out this 1 over pi, that's the integral of the thing squared. So that's where the 1 over pi comes from. So pi is equal to the integral from minus pi to pi of cosine squared nx dx. And that's where the 1 over pi comes from. Well, fortunately, I'm running out of time because I'm also running out of steam. You'll agree that this is annoying to have ans and bns, and they're all different. There's a very neat way to write Fourier series that we're going to come up with next week. Well, by the way, there's no class on Monday because of Martin Luther King Day, so I'll see you next Wednesday. But this is annoying to have different types of terms, sine terms and cosine terms. This Fourier series can be rewritten in terms of complex exponentials, and the sum looks like this, the summation cn e to the in theta, inx rather, as n goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. And that's one type of coefficient, they're all the same. And the cn's are going to be, have a one formula that works for all. Cn is going to be equal to the integral from minus pi to pi. Let's see, there's a 1 over 2 pi in front. And it's going to be the integral of f of x times e to the minus in theta d theta. So I'm going to show you why that's going to be true and why that's an improvement. It's obviously an improvement because it's much less writing. And I'm sorry, there's no theta. This is an x. So I'll show that next time. Okay, that's enough for today.
So I just signed up for this class yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so I missed the first two lectures. So I guess, like, where's the homework? And
okay, there's a Math 428 homepage. Kill this.
And yeah, if there's just anything.
Yeah, so everything's there, including the output from my lectures here.
Okay.
So you can go actually look at those. And I've got audio from the Boiler class that you could listen to if you wanted to.
Oh,
so
cool.
You could actually catch up and hear those lectures.
Okay. I guess I'll have all Monday to do that.
If I can end this task, then I can show you this thing.
No, I mean, it's fine. Like, I'll come to
those. If you email me, I can email you the URL.
Okay. I have a question about the rad equation. So how does that come from?
That's where the pi, if I multiply that equation by cosine nx and integrate, there's going to be a cosine squared term that